Welcome to B2B Healthy Copy Talks, the podcast that blends together marketing strategy, copywriting, and messaging tactics for the B2B fitness, health, and wellness industries. As a former personal trainer, award-winning writer for major health and fitness magazines, and an online fitness course creator, I know firsthand the challenges of marketing within these industries. So whether you're a seasoned copywriter, a savvy marketer, or an industry expert, you'll find valuable insights in every episode. From B2B SaaS providers and marketing experts to fitness entrepreneurs, I'll bring you interviews and discussions that spark creativity, drive growth, and jack up your professional game. We'll explore the specific challenges within the B2B world, how to stand out among the competition, and increase conversions in every area. Let's dive in. My guest today is Nadia Milani. Nadia is the VP of Marketing at wellnessliving.com. She is a B2B SaaS marketer with over 15 years experience helping companies grow and scale. So she's currently the VP of Marketing at Wellness Living, but she's also has quite an extensive background we're going to dive into that's related to marketing. And she's also a frequent guest on podcasts and conferences, and she's a top marketing voice on LinkedIn. So today, Nadia is going to talk about her first 30, 60, and 90 days at Wellness Living. What are her biggest challenges? How she managed to make the most impact within that time, and a whole lot more. Let's dive right in. First of all, welcome and thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're crazy busy. So I appreciate it. How did you end up like the wellness? I want to ask you about wellness tech, but before I get to that, like, is there a segue from fitness and wellness to actually like seeking this out? Like what has been your own personal like adventure with, you know?
So I've been always into fitness throughout my whole life, but sporadically, but it was only until COVID where it became actually something I did every single day. So every day I would get up, workouts for at least like an hour. And I did that for 3 years straight, every single day. It became this like consistency and this thing that I brought into my life. But it was very transformative and life-changing, not only from a physical perspective. Like I was maybe more heavy set, but not like dramatically. That was one of the benefits. Physically, I felt and looked better, but it was really around mentally. Because at the time, my kids were small. I had two children. Well, my son was 3 at the time when COVID hit. My daughter was 6.
Wow.
And not only was I leading a new team at a new organization, so I was head of marketing in cloud, so it's a completely different vertical that I'm in now. Not only was I doing that, I was home full time. All of a sudden, we couldn't leave the house. I was teaching my daughter. She was grade 2 at the time. And then my son wasn't even in school. So he was like all this free time. And then, you know, it was just all of this overwhelming stuff happening at the time. It was only the consistency of fitness that really helped me get through that period of time, where I was able to manage everything. It was the ability to like get up, spend that time and give that time for myself.
Right.
Where I was able to not only, it helped me lead myself. And I really believe it to lead anything, in your family, it really starts with you. You have to lead yourself before you lead your family, before you lead your team, before you lead an organization. It really starts with yourself. So that's when I became really emphatically like just, into fitness, and then from there branched off to yoga and to Pilates. So it's just something that's really important to my life.
What kind of workouts did you do? Because I know I'm like a real gym rat. I don't think there's anything negative about that phrase. I use it all the time. So when COVID hit, I remember it's so funny because it was March. Well, it wasn't funny, but it's later when you think about it. It was March, and I said,
we're starting to laugh about it now. I think finally it took years, but like, we're starting to laugh at some of the things that happened during
I know. I mean, there's so much craziness. But we didn't really have a home gym. So I said to my husband, let's get these power blocks, which are like these nested dumbbells, because my whole thing is weight training. And I got them on Amazon. I remember thinking there was like a delayed, and we weren't going to get them until April 2nd. I thought, well, by then this whole thing's going to be over.
Like, I thought just the pandemic.
No, that's optimistic. That is like super optimistic. You're like, I'm not going to get all this stuff. It's going to be over soon. I love that.
Right. And so, yeah. And now I still use them. So, but yeah. So did you seek out wellness living?
So wellness living, actually, the wellness tech thing came up. I was very happily working in sales tech. I was at a startup and was very much enjoying being there and working there. And it was, a recruiter reached out to me and not to, and this sounds like egotistical, but you know, when you're ahead of marketing, especially B2B SaaS, I find that in tech, like you will get, you know, emailed and connected with recruiters. And but this was really interesting. So wellness living was in wellness tech and, you know, we're helping bring wellness into communities through helping fitness studios, yoga studios, Pilates studios, et cetera, operate their businesses. And I just thought, like, that is like an amazing mission. Like, and it was like for the first time, very personally and professionally aligned with what I believe in. And, you know, when you're, you know, I'm in my 40s now, like I've been working in marketing my whole career, B2B mostly tech, you know, it gets to a point where, you know, mission is really important. Like what you're doing every single day and what drives you has to be super aligned with what you believe in.
Right.
And that was what drew me to wellness living. Is like, wow, that's like so cool. I get to like talk to like studio owners every day. Like that's like awesome.
Yeah. Hey there, fellow marketers. If you're anything like me, juggling multiple platforms for meetings, webinars, and calendar bookings can make you feel like tossing your laptop out the window. It can be a nightmare just setting up a simple team meeting. Am I right? Thankfully, there's a better way. I'm talking about Sessions. Sessions is an all-in-one scheduling, meeting, and presentation software that is super user-friendly. And it's so much more than a Zoom alternative. Sessions is like having a personal assistant for all your meetings. It provides meeting notes, makes it easy to share documents and screens, distills key points for quick overviews, and makes it easy for everyone to work on one board. One reviewer raved about Sessions, saying, "In a world where remote work and virtual meetings are becoming the norm, Sessions stands out as a platform that takes video conferencing to the next level." Are you ready to transform your meetings into more productive collaborations? If so, head on over to sessions.us today and try it out for free. That's sessions.us. Don't miss out on the platform that will soon be a leader in the webinar and virtual meeting space, allowing you to have better video meetings. Visit sessions.us today. And now back to our show. And how does, I mean, there's a lot of other companies that are, there's, you have a lot of competition. I know that wellness living is one of the biggest ones. But how does wellness living position itself like among everyone else?
At the time when we started, the positioning was just like really an alternative because there weren't many other business operation software for fitness gyms and studio software. So really we were like one of the only other alternatives to Mindbody, which is what like the major market player. So it was just, we were like, wow, there's like an actual other booking software that I can use when we first started. Mm-hmm. So I think that alone was like having the differentiator and another person in the market, I think helps fuel growth. To us, one of the big things that we lean on is customer service. So it's really being able to be there for studio owners. Cause like the thing is like studio owners and speaking to them, I spent like my first 30, 60 days at the organization, just speaking to a lot of our customers, like what are their pain points? What are they interested in? And like, if you're a studio owner or if you know a studio owner, like they don't got a lot of time. Like right. There's like two or three potential owners, maybe there's only one, and you really just want to spend your time doing the thing that you love, which is being with your customers, either running, you know, certain classes or yoga seminars, and you want to be able to do that versus like worrying about payments and like, am I getting, enough leads this month, and am I emailing my customers and all of those things that come with running the business. So, I think that's what happens is they don't want to spend a lot of time setting things up. So I think the biggest leverage that we have is like having that customer service. But the positioning is really, especially when we started, it was like really the alternative, like having something else besides the main market player that was around at the time.
Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like you, the company sort of caught that crest of that wave, like when it just started, because I think now there's more and more than when they first, like when did Wellness Living start?
When did, so 10 years ago, actually, okay. This year. Yeah, so wow. Yeah. Like we were in beta, like about 10 years ago. So it has been quite some time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cause just recently I've just heard about other companies that are doing something similar. And it's like, you know, I think if you can get in there, right. When everything, like I think about this with, I've worked with a lot of coaches that are helping entrepreneurs. And so they, you know, the ones that got in way like Amy Porterfield's of the world, they're the one that really blew up because that's when there was not a lot of choices around. And then, you know, they grew because it's just so much harder now to break into that field.
Everything, you know, yeah. Like market timing, like if you were there behind the curve and you're one of the early adopt or early offerings, I think that is so important to any business success, like whether you're in wellness tech or any really tech, or even if you're a consultant or you're offering business courses, like that is like essential. Like are we early, or how many competitors do we have in market, and how do we differentiate?
Yeah. And it's so important. So you've been at Wellness Living for not that long as of this recording. It's been how long now? Has it been 4 months?
So technically, like I started in October. So if like, LinkedIn will count like each month that you're actually there, but it was at the end of October. So I'm going into my fifth month. But you know, startups, like they say this and it's absolutely true. It's like almost, is it cat years? One month feels like a very long time. So I've only been there for 5 months, but it does feel like a little bit longer than that for sure.
Yeah. And so take me back to like, how did the whole thing, like what happened in your first 30 days? I don't know if you can break it into 30, 60, 90, but what were some of the things that were most impactful during those different periods?
Absolutely. You know, I actually have a 30, 60, 90 day template that I'm going to like bring up while we're talking about it. But okay, so this is the thing. When you start at a company, like it's super important and critical that those 90 days are your most impactful. Yeah. And like, it's really important to come in and like make a splash, because there's a couple of things, especially from an executive level, is that you're helping run the organization, right? So it's like you have visibility. So it's about managing up, down, and across. So you're managing not only your team or teams, but you're managing also up to the board, as well as to the, you know, potentially to the CEO, but across like your executive team. So you have to have like high impact in a very small amount of time, and you have to drive results. So it's really important to understand like where are the opportunities to drive results. And I know that sounds like shallow. It's like, okay, is it really about performance? Is it really always about, you know, the money? But it really is. It's about like, how can we drive early wins that show that we can bring in revenue? So it's like really understanding like, what are we currently working on? What is the data? Mm-hmm. Get access to all the data, and understanding what do we need to drive for the future? So now that sounds hard. It's like, how do you do that in 30 days? I'm going to actually break it down for you. So like the first 30 days is really, simply it's about getting in the weeds. This is not anything that, is new, but it's like getting in the weeds with like high intensity. Because the thing is like, you don't want to be there for 30, 60, 90. And then at the 90 days, it's like, oh, sorry, thank you very much. And it's actually, I've seen it happen. I've seen executives come in, mm-hmm. and then after 90 days, it's like, you know what? We're actually going to part ways. You weren't as impactful as we need. Specifically wow. In startups and tech, it's like you have to have that intensity.
Yeah.
So it's really understanding the business, the financials, you know, what are the current roles? How are we going to work together? Meeting the team and building those relationships. I always believe that it's like one conversation at a time. That's how you build those relationships. So it's meeting with your key stakeholders, your key partners, and having what we're having right now, mm-hmm. like a conversation about like, how are we going to do this? What were the biggest wins? What were the losses? And building those relationships. But then understanding like the financials as well is like, okay, where are we now? Where were we, and where do we need to go?
Yeah.
And then understanding your marketing activities that have helped support those initiatives or that revenue number. And it's really understanding, okay, like what from a marketing perspective do we need to do? But I'm going to stop there because I'm like delivering it, Linda, and then I'm giving it in like big batches. So I don't know if you wanted to ask some questions there before we move on to the 60-90-day framework.
Well, the thing that stood out to me is it sounds like one of the most important things was you just having like creating these relationships, getting to know the people that you were working with. I mean, is that something that's kind of underrated?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I see this happen all the time. And it's a qualitative thing, but this is probably simplifying it a lot, but I believe wholeheartedly that your career and your business success is very much weighted on the relationships you build.
I agree.
Regardless of where you work, you can be in sales, you can be in marketing, you can be as the CEO, but it's how you build those relationships, how you work with people, how you inspire them. What is it that you are leaving with them?
Right.
Do you lift them up or do you drain them?
Yeah.
Do you give them motivation or do you deflate them? Do you make them want to come tomorrow, to show up tomorrow? Or do you feel that you kind of make them feel like, I don't want to show up tomorrow?
Right.
What is the stuff that drives business forward? That's what creates great, fantastic companies. That is what makes organizations succeed. And I've seen the opposite happen. And absolutely to your point is that relationships are underrated, but it is so critical to driving business outcomes that you want.
What's interesting is I used to do in-home personal training way back when.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah. So I'd go into people's homes and so I'd get to know people. Like, I don't know. I mean, I would know what people do for a living, but when everyone's in their shorts and t-shirts, you know, we're all just people, right?
By the way, I'm wearing shorts right now. A little known fact. I'm wearing shorts right now.
It's so funny. But I was working with a couple of really high-level CEOs, and the two that come to mind, one was just like, they're both super nice. Okay. One of them was at a very big tech firm and he was next in line to be CEO. And he was actually like, he answered to the CEO. But he was so down to earth that people would come out of retirement to work for him. Like when he would get into like higher and higher levels. And his wife told me this, like, they just love him. Another one that I worked for, he would always ask me about me. You know, I come in the house, like, how are you doing? You know, what's going on with you? And it was always about me. And it just struck me as being funny because here are these people that, you know, you think they're going to be super tough. And I did have, there was another one, total opposite end of the spectrum, a couple people who were so difficult, we just could not work together. And it was to a point where I would leave there in tears, just very condescending, you know, and I don't know how people worked for somebody like that. I really don't.
The relationship building component specifically around CEOs, like it was so interesting, like you walking into their homes and seeing like the two different styles, like where one is really about like learning more about who's in front of them and listening to what they're saying versus like, this is my point of view, my agenda, and this is what I want to get done. And perhaps maybe not being able to drive, you know, that feeling of like I'm being listened to and really building that relationship. That's such an interesting story.
Yeah. I mean, both of these people were very tough to work for, but they were fair. And that's what I'd always hear is like, fair, but you know, they still had standards and criteria that had to be met. So what do you think was most impactful? What about 60 days? What happened at that point? Did you continue like developing these relationships? And then what else came into play?
Well, 30 days was a little bit of a whirlwind too, because I was actually in board meetings, like in giving very early observations. Okay, this is what I think is going really, really well. This is where we need to change. So it was really managing up, managing across, and managing down. Had to make some really quick decisions on just like team and like, you know, what roles do we need and like which roles aren't working anymore. So those are always a little bit difficult because, you know, that those, you have to kind of make some tough decisions on personnel, et cetera. But I think that the 60-day mark is where you really have to start to show early impact. Like you have to deliver on at least one win that is going to significantly is maybe an exaggeration, but you have to be able to help the organization in some capacity that's visible. So for example, within 60 days, you know, we did a pricing change, like led the strategy and pricing, executed that. And we were able to see the outcome of that the first day. So that was really critical in showing, okay, like we have marketing's help here. They're driving business outcomes. It's actually helping drive these things for our total, like, you know, just to help hit our total target. I also started in November. So it was interesting because in 60 days, I also had to build the 2024 plan as well as the forecast and the budget. And it's always interesting to do that because within a short period of time, because you don't really have a lot of the historical knowledge. You do have it in like the data. You can kind of see some trends, but it was like, right into like 60 days, like building that for 2024. So I would have loved to have seen like maybe that slow down a bit because you're making a lot of assumptions, right? When you're building those forecasts. So I would have loved to see a little bit more time there. But other things that, you know, I had worked on was like, what can we change today that will have the short-term impact? Like, what do we want to stop? What do we want to start? And what do we want to continue? Mm-hmm. And in that 60-day mark, I also created, which I have a template for too, is that first marketing offsite. So bringing in like your team, so whether you're operations or whether you're finance, whatever it is bringing your team and lining on, okay, what worked, but what didn't work? What should we stop immediately? What should we continue doing? What should we start? Like, what are the things that we've always wanted to try, but either were under-resourced, couldn't do it, didn't have the right people, didn't have the right leadership, whatever it was. So, and then it's also talking through and building that psychological safety within the team, being able to really just like lay out all the issues or the things that they've been struggling with, and creating that open forum where there's no rules except that we talk and respect everyone. So we're not here to like personally attack anyone, but being able to start to talk through what are the things that we experienced, what are some of the issues, and really, really creating that early on, because if your team trusts you early on, they will trust you later on. And it's really about showing that vulnerability and maybe starting the conversation, maybe starting through, you know, that conversation around, I've noticed this in terms of how we operate, how we communicate, what are your thoughts, how can we improve? And so that was really critical in the 60-day mark, is bringing the team together and building that trust.
Yeah. You seem like a good people person. Like that's.
Oh, do I?
Well, you sound like, you know, the people I was talking about, because you know, I've seen all different levels of just most of the people who could afford a personal trainer in home were executives. That's the level, you know. So I've seen and I did it for about 15 over, you know, almost close to 20 years.
Wish you were close by. I would like absolutely hire you.
Oh, now it's like I don't even do that anymore. And you know, one of the reasons I don't is because you know, people see you as a therapist. It's like, I would just run into situations where it's like, I just want to help you get in shape. I don't, you know, and you just get wrapped up in people's personal problems, especially when you're going in homes. I mean, I've walked in with people in the middle of an argument and I get kind of the brunt of it and I have nothing to do with it. And it's like, all right, you know, this is like, it was wearing on me, which is pretty.
You know, I think that's like so much with like service types of roles and like, I think that type of, I think like a hairstylist probably get the brunt of that as well.
And the thing is, and people don't always treat you, because I was in a service position, and I was the worst is when someone has referred me to someone, one of their friends, not knowing that the friend, because this happened once, was just really horrible to anyone who was in a service position. And it just didn't work out. When I told the person who referred me, I said, you know, it just didn't work out. And they're like, well, I don't understand that, because we get along with them. Well, yeah, because you both go to the same country club. I'm not in that, you know, but that's really what it was with this particular person. Not everyone's like that, but thankfully.
Yeah,
but absolutely. It was tough, you know. But as far as other challenges, I mean, was there anything that surprised you about like, because you've been in marketing for like 15 years, right?
You know what was actually surprised me? Well, so first of all, I want to address one thing with the people comment. There's another podcast I'm doing in April where we're just kind of like doubling down on this particular point, is that really, I think that high performance has nothing to do with the numbers. I really do believe it's about building culture, building a team that trusts each other, where we can talk about the things that are hurting, the good, the bad, the ugly. Like, it's really important to build that foundation, because if you can't do that, you can't scale. Right. You can't, like, if you develop that yes culture where everyone's kind of afraid to say what's going on, then you actually don't create what you need, which is a high, high performance culture. And that's always based on trust. And that's why I love the book Radical Candor by Kim Scott. I mean, I read it like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, but it's like, it's really about those quadrants and being able to have a radically candid culture is really about building that foundation of trust, which is really about showing that you care to your people and giving them the feedback that helps them get better. So wanted to just address that because, again, high performance has nothing to do with the numbers. It has to do with building the trust with your team, So it's about being a real person.
Because otherwise they spend their time trying to figure out how to undermine you instead of working with you too, right? Because you hear people like Steve Jobs, like, you know, he was notorious for being awful, but yet, you know, the company, you can't argue with his success.
You know why? Because that had to do a lot with, and this is just my own personal, maybe I did read this somewhere. I have no idea. But it's probably in The Infinite Game with Simon Sinek. So he really wrote about The Infinite Game. And with Apple, it was really about the mission, right? So you're signing up to that mission of bringing like innovation to like the world and bringing this like, you know, this like amazing thing to people. I mean, now we know, some part of me is like a part of me thinks that like we're going to wake up in 20 years and think about the mobile phone of the same way we thought about cigarettes, like, you know, in the 70s is like, what the hell was that? That was bad for us, you know? But, you know, when you're waking up every single day, you know, that was the mission. So people signed up for that mission. It didn't matter what Cleo did or said, because it's like, you know what, this is going to change the world. And there's a certain type of person and just many, many people that signed up for that and they're all for it. So I think a lot of that has to do with like that really, really important mission that can sometimes result in like, you know what? Yeah. They didn't really speak to me that nicely, but that's okay. Cause I'm changing the world with this product. So
isn't that how he got one of his biggies? I forget who it was. He got one of his big executives on board who was working for Pepsi at the time or something. He said, are you going to spend the rest of your life selling sugar water? Or do you want to change the world? And that's
right. I think that's also in The Infinite Game too. There was a part about that one too. It's a great book if you haven't read it.
I have.
Fantastic one. But we were talking about the 90 days. So I think it's important that 60 days you have to drive that result. You have to show that intensity, but build those relationships, build that trust. And then 90 days is, presenting this for depending on where you start. But for me, it was really about presenting the strategy. Okay, this is what we're going to work on for the next year. This is like the forecast, this is the budget, this is how we're going to do it, this is the people that we're going to have that are going to help drive that outcome. And it's communicating that up, down, and across as well, so everyone understands like this is what we're doing, and getting FaceTime. Because I think it's specifically when you're, I mean, again, like in any executive position, but it's important to get in front of like not only your team but across the company and be able to vocalize and verbalize what the plan is and get everybody like inspired and like, yeah, this is awesome. I'm so excited to do this. So that's the other thing, is like building that higher energy culture. And that's again around the trust and having that visibility. So that's the 30, 60, 90 days. So it's a mix of intensity. It's a mix of being able to show early wins that drive outcomes, building relationships, having building trust within your team, and then also building the vision. So people are like, yeah, I'm totally sold on this. And then the fourth month is like when it gets real, because then you got to deliver.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you addressed this. I asked about anything surprise you? Did anything surprise you, or were you?
Oh, right. Anything surprise you? Yeah. That was a really good question. Sorry, I diverted there. Sorry to all the listeners there. Sorry, I took you on a wild ride there for a minute. I think for me, what surprised me personally is that I have been a leader for a very long time. And I always say, okay, I'm ready for any challenge. I'm ready for anything. And you know, when you start at a new company, there's always different challenges that can potentially keep you on your toes. And I think, I feel like, you know, especially after like the 30, 60, 90 days, when you're delivering, I'm surprised at how hard it is to maintain that balance. As much as I know how important it is for me to have balance, because we talked about this earlier, you got to lead yourself before you can lead your team, your organization, the world. I don't want to lead the world. But, you know, I still find it so hard to do that. I still have to really be super intentional about that. I have to like book it in my calendar. Otherwise, it does not get done. But it is only in that doing that, that you will achieve the success that you need. Because again, you know, you're being pulled in a million different directions. So you have to be able to respond, be there for a lot of people. You know, as a woman, and I hate to go down this road, but as a woman, you know, it's just different. Yeah. It is different. And people can, I mean, it's International Women's Day last week. And I do hope there's a day where we don't need a day to celebrate women, that we are just like, you know, equal. But it is different because we have, you know, my son just walked into this conversation, you know, like I don't have anyone watching. Unfortunately, it's March break here. I don't have anyone watching him today. He walked into the conversation. I have, you know, my family, the females just have, you know, we have, you know, the family dynamic, and yes, we can get help, but also as female leaders, you know, I'm consistently in many situations at work where I'm the only woman in the room, definitely the only woman in the boardroom.
Yeah.
So, and the only woman in a lot of different situations. So it's, and it's sometimes I feel like, you know, it's just different for us. We have to be, take care of ourselves so we can take care of everyone else and be at our optimal performance. And that's hard. It's still hard. And that's what, like, I get mad at myself sometimes. I'm like, okay, like, honestly, how long I've been, you know, been in this for 18 years. When am I going to learn to take care of myself first? But I still fall off the wagon.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I always think, and I don't know why lately, maybe it's because it's International Women's Day, because I'm not big on, you know, on all of the feminism, all that stuff. But I do notice, like, there was something on TV yesterday. They were talking about a group of people that were, I don't know, it was some kind of board. There was not a single woman on it. And I kept, now I'm really noticing this. And it's, and then, I don't know. I mean, I've never worked in a corporate environment, and it freaks me out to think about dealing with. I have dealt with very strong women, and like I was a member of a board of, I wouldn't say the name of it, but it was a big writer's board. And I'm, as an introvert, I'm fine one-on-one. But when it comes to standing up for myself, when everyone else is a very loud extrovert, I will just, it's really hard for me. And so I just felt like I was constantly getting run over. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, I'd have to really work on if I were to work in a company, you know. So
I have to work on it. Yeah, it's something that because the thing is like, you know, you're there to represent like your team, but you're also there to create change and not be a yes person. And I had a conversation with a mentor. I posted this on LinkedIn, and he said to me, "Nadia, you know what?" And I'm like, "What?" And he said, "You know what? You're becoming a yes person." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "You know, don't become a yes person. You're not hired to say yes. You're hired to bring in solutions and bring in change and bring in innovation and bring in things that will drive business outcomes and drive the business forward." And I'm like, "Oh," I paused it. It made me mad because I'm like, "Oh, I'm like really my," and I'm like, "Yeah, you know what? I am becoming a yes person." And part of it is that, you know, you're in those exact situations. Like sometimes you got to pick your battles, and you can't be constantly exhausted by the battles that you're choosing to fight. But sometimes when you're at that level, a lot of it is just having a lot of friction and being able to work through it. And sometimes it does become very much of a debate, and you have to like have a lot of energy for that. That's why the wellness and taking care of yourself prepares you for, I think mentally for me, those types of conversations. Cause as long as I'm like taking care of myself and, you know, bringing the data in first and being able to, you know, bring that voice forward, you're able to, I feel like, I mean, again, it's not for everyone, but maintain composure in those scenarios and be able to fight the fights that you need.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we could talk forever, it seems.
I know, I love that. I want to like...
Well, I know that you have meetings and it's... I know I was so happy to be able to get you on this podcast.
Thank you for being patient. Thank you so much for being patient with me. I know I mean, the first 90 days are so busy, and we've been trying to go together for quite some time.
Yeah, I know. And it's been tough. So I'm really glad. Where can people find you? Is it mainly LinkedIn? Is there anywhere else that...
Yes. So I'm on LinkedIn, basically. I'm on Twitter a bit, but not really. So I feel like if you really want to get a hold of me, I'm on LinkedIn and we'll be happy to answer any questions about leadership, about wellness, about marketing. I'm on there usually once or twice a week posting and publishing. Would love to meet you, talk to you if you want to get a hold of me.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Nadia. I really appreciate your time today.
Linda, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and engaging. If so, please share it with your friends and colleagues who might also be interested in marketing and copywriting trends and innovations. And remember, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the B2B Marketing and Copywriting Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next week with another show, so stay tuned.